Number one, this is a podcast for small to medium businesses. We're going to talk marketing, hiring, leadership, human resources, taxes, operations, everything you need to run your business better. Number two, the experts you hear on this show are going to give you easy to understand tips that you can put in place quickly. Number three, every day you gotta laugh. Life is too short to take it seriously all the time. This is 3 for 3. Let's go. Today's guest is Ken Babby. Ken is the owner and CEO of the Akron Rubber Ducks baseball team, a AA affiliate for the Cleveland Indians. He's also the founder of Fast Forward Sports Group, which owns the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, a AA affiliate for the Miami Marlins, which makes Ken, at 38 years old, the youngest multi-franchise owner in professional sports. Through Ken's leadership, his baseball teams have become known for some outrageous and wacky promotions, which have earned the Rubber Ducks the Minor League Baseball's Larry McPhail Award for the top promotional team in 2015. The Rubber Ducks have also been named the most complete franchise in minor league baseball. Before getting into these baseball franchises, Ken spent 13 years with the Washington Post, where he rose to the position of Vice President of Advertising and Chief Revenue Officer of Washington Post Media, and General Manager of Washington Post Digital. Welcome to the show, Ken.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I need to ask you before we really get into it here, that what does baseball mean to you that you have chosen to invest in these two minor league teams?
You know, I grew up around the game, and one of the things that I was really fortunate to experience from a young age was being around the ballpark here in the Washington, D.C. area, and Baltimore specifically, going to games with my dad. And he was the general counsel of the Baltimore Orioles for many years, worked for the Washington Redskins for a long time, and was an agent in the NBA. And so being around the game, learning from it, was something that I had a passion for from a really young age. But the experience, the community involvement, the way that the community rallies behind a hometown sports team, and the way that people gather together on a special weekend or Friday night, sports, there's nothing like it, which brings together thousands of people around a community good.
So did you have a favorite player growing up?
I did. It was a catcher, actually an Ohio guy, ironically. Longtime catcher for the Baltimore Orioles by the name of Chris Hoyles, who grew up outside of Toledo and Bowling Green grad, and was never the best player on the team, but actually ended up having a 14-year major league career, the majority of it in Baltimore, and worked harder than anybody else on that team. And that was really from an early age something that took me by attention, and that, you know, this was never the guy with the most physical skill or necessarily the best baseball skill, but he was the first guy in the gym every day, the last guy to leave, and that work ethic was something that really, really inspired me.
Yeah, I remember Chris. It's good to know about him. I didn't know a lot about his work ethic, but that's a cool story. We're about the same age. I kind of expected you to say Cal Ripken Jr., which I'm sure was a lot of people's answer.
Yeah, I mean, Cal Ripken was an incredible player. And I mean, to grow up watching a Hall of Famer and you know, ironically, I had a chance to be the bat boy for the Orioles for a couple of springs down in spring training over spring break when I was growing up, and some great Cal Ripken stories, which if we have time, I'll share. But, he was just the opposite of Chris Hoyles in that, you know, he just was naturally talented on the field every day, also great work ethic. But, you know, he got out there and the ball just flew off the bat, and he had the ability to make the most, just the most acrobatic plays at shortstop, and just an amazing guy, play every game for 16 years.
He was, I grew up going to a lot of games up at Municipal Stadium with the Indians, and I always brought my baseball mitt hoping to catch a foul ball. And the one that I've ever caught in my life was from him, off of one of those metal beams up at the Municipal Stadium there. So that's my memory of him. But, yeah, definitely a good guy.
Yeah, it's fabulous. That's a great memory.
So, Ken, you've been involved with taking an existing product with Akron and Jacksonville baseball teams and breathing some new life into it. I think the most obvious thing is changing up the names and the logos and the branding behind it. But there's a lot of other things that have gone into it as well. I'm sure you've done this. You did this with the Washington Post during your time there. You really were there through the digital era, taking something that was a traditional print piece as well and bringing that into the digital realm. So I know you've got a lot of good experience in that. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring you onto the show and talk about three things that companies could do across the board to bring some new life into it, to a refresh. So with that, can you jump into a first tip?
Yeah, I think that's first of all, thanks again for having me. There have been a couple of unique threads that I would say have sort of transcended through, kind of the three chapters of my professional career so far. The Post, which you alluded to, Akron, with the sort of birth and revolution of great affordable family entertainment with the Rubber Ducks, and most recently with the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. And you learn, and we continue to learn every day that we wake up and continue to evolve. But I'll tell you, the first thread that just absolutely is essential and critical in the way that we do business at our company and has been probably the mainstay for a lot of great companies, has been hiring great people. And it's said so much that people are what drives the engine of any great company. But I am particularly biased about the people that work with us in Akron and in Jacksonville. And it was also true during my time at the Washington Post. If you think about it, the Post as a newspaper was around 130 years before the internet came to be. And so they were a surviving, successful, thriving business for over a century. And then the world changed. Unless people wanted to read, the ink on paper, newsprint, and they had a choice. And as an executive team, I remember sitting around the boardroom, we were either going to die, and I hate to be dramatic, but the company was likely to not survive, or we were going to have to adapt and evolve and find ways of delivering information, content, in the case of the Post, and news, in the ways that people would want to read it and digest it. And so the team around that table, the team of executives, the creativity, really the brilliance, the passion to get up every day and be focused on a set of goals of really pivoting a company that had done one thing really, really well, a world-class company for a long time, and actually pivoting away from that, much to the dismay of perhaps some of the employees in the company who said, why can't we just keep doing what we're doing? And so I would say hiring great leaders, evolving and continuing to invest in them, not only financial, although that's a critical part of it, it's through training, it's through development, it's immersing them in new experiences. And that's exactly what we've done in Akron and exactly what we've done in Jacksonville. And so, we say a lot in business that, I said this to a group last week, you can't buy experience on Amazon.com. And it's really true. It's hiring people that have a mix of skills. They're all, bring something different to the table. And then when you get in that room and you're sitting around that table and you're by that whiteboard, which is kind of my happy place, you take the biggest, hairiest, worst problems and things you're trying to solve, and you put the right people in the room and you let them do what they do. And the hardest part for me is getting out of the way and sitting back and maybe keeping my mouth, shut and letting them expand and take over the conversation. When it happens, Kurt, it's a very, very special thing to watch.
So Ken, what do you look for in a new hire? Is there an aha moment for you, or is there a particular question that's maybe not the expected question that you might ask someone that makes you say, yeah, this is the right person, or they're not?
Yeah, there's over the more sort of recent years, there's a greater science that's probably been brought into hiring, and there are people that believe deeply in very specific analytical tests and behavioral questions and metrics that must come out of a verbal or even a written interview or assessment. I wouldn't say that we disagree that those don't work. They probably work in certain environments, but in our company, speaking specifically to the baseball business, one of the things I like to do and is critical to us, in our hiring process is asking people to give an example of a particular time that they've been in a certain situation. So if it's a position for sale, you know, if it's a ticket sales position or a corporate partnerships position critical to end the lifeblood of any sports team, a question may be, you know, give me an example when you were given an aggressive goal that you had to hit and take us through the process of what you did to get us there or did in a previous company to get there. What types of challenges did you face? How did you handle that adversity ultimately? And tell me about the win, the success. How did it feel when you made it? And one of two things happened pretty quickly. One, the person can eloquently give an example of how they faced that adversity and made that goal. Or two, it becomes evident that they've never done it before. And it's not to say we wouldn't hire the person who's never done it before, but I certainly like to hire people with experience that have driven and had success at accomplishing certain goals.
Great. All right. So tip number one is make sure you hire great people, the right peer person for the job. I know that from our experience as well. When you have the right people on board, then you can do some great things. What would be your second piece of advice?
You know, this has happened a little bit more organically than deliberately. You know, we all say we want to hire great people, and that in some ways may be not a surprise to a business leader or an entrepreneur listening, you know, here at home. The second is tie a thread to your community. Develop a plan, a deliberate plan of how your business is going to be activated in the community. Now, in the case of a sports team, that may seem like a very easy thing to say. It's critical that a successful baseball team, particularly a minor league baseball team, has a reading program or active in the hospitals or in the schools. Our reading program in Akron, for example, is called Clack, Open a Book and Read, playing after obviously the Rubber Ducks name. There are different things that businesses can do at any level to be able to engage in the community. And some could be as simple as closing the office down as we do once a month on a Friday, and letting employees pick different organizations where the entire staff will go volunteer. We call it our Helping Hands program. We literally close the offices down at noon on a Friday once a month, and we pile in our cars, and somebody on the team has selected where we're going that day. Could be the Akron Food Bank, could be Urban Vision, you know, you name it, United Way, et cetera. And I would say be deliberate about doing that. And as I said, it happened for us a little bit more organically because we started listening to what our employees wanted. But I will tell you that great businesses make a mark in the community that they serve. It's not just about making those sales, hitting those numbers, reaching those budgets, and celebrating with the team. How are you as a business going to find a way to reinvest back into your community? And that can be through a whole host of different ways that are in line with what the company's mission is.
I love the fact that you have your team pick the volunteer opportunities. It means they have stake in the game. And, you know, one of the things that we stress to our clients is to be authentic and to show what you believe in and what you do, not just what you're manufacturing, whatever service you're providing, but you're showing who you are, what your personality is like.
You know, it's true. And they're in the front seat, not just in our community initiatives, but in a lot of the things that we do. Our promotional nights at the ballpark, fans obviously have known minor league baseball to have these quirky promotions. We have 70 home games a year. That's a lot of nights to try and come up with, you know, quirky things to get people to come down. We can't shoot fireworks all 70 nights, although, you know, we shoot them at about a third of our games, which are always popular. But our staff sits around that table in our promotions meetings, coming up with ideas, thinking about ways that they can evolve the program. And I think that creates leadership at the front lines. I'm a big believer in it. And would encourage others to do it as well. As you said, they get some real skin in the game.
That's awesome. So recap here. Number two is making sure you're tying a thread to your community. So what do you have for our third piece of advice?
You know, the third piece of advice is an adage that probably applies in life as much as it does in business. And that's the importance of being prepared You know, it sounds like a page taken out of the Scouts, of course, which is their motto of being prepared. But you know, it is a life sort of skill. And as a father of a 9-year-old, I know you have kids as well. You know, you think about the experience of the lessons that we're trying to teach for our family. And so much today, still to me, after all these years, you know, it's amazing to me how somebody comes into a meeting and they're just ill prepared for a conversation, for, you know, a proposal, especially if it's a sales meeting, not knowing their audience or not knowing or being respectful of the environment that they're in. Being prepared, you know, and really outworking and out understanding the audience of the room you're going to be in is such a lost art. You know, there's sort of two lost arts. I guess I'll give you a bonus fourth one on this and I'll tie them together. Two lost arts to me in business that I just don't see people taking advantage of. And they're just instant home runs, no pun intended. One is, of course, just being prepared, doing your homework before you walk in that meeting, even if it's a quick Google search to read the person's bio before you sit in a meeting with a client coming in the building. Although you should probably be doing more than that and have your goals outlined for the meeting. The second lost art is the beauty of the thank you note. We just don't see them anymore. I don't know about you, but I don't get a lot of mail anymore that I'm excited to get. The mail comes, they're generally bills or you know, advertisements for different things. But I'll tell you what, the ability, you know, to sit down at the end of the week, Friday afternoons or Sunday afternoons are when I like to do it, and just jot down 10 or 15 thank you cards to the people that I met that week that were engaged in a conversation, and slapping a stamp on it and getting it on its way, which arrives on their desk, you know, Monday, Tuesday of the following week, is such a special thing to do. It doesn't cost a lot, and it differentiates you from that that email box. I mean, sending a thank you note over email is nice. It's a step up over what a lot of people do, but it gets lost in that clutter of 200 or 300 emails during the day. It just doesn't have that same feel. So I guess I gave you a third and a fourth one there. But two lost arts, being prepared and the importance of writing that thank you note.
You know, I appreciate the extra tip there, Ken. I think that I've heard people talk about the importance of that handwritten thank you note. I think that's one common theme among some of my favorite successful people out there, is that they appreciate what goes into something like that. That and again, it's that human touch, bringing it into play here and taking the time to do that. And it just makes such a difference. And, you know, one thing that I'll say is that I know that you have interns that you bring on over the summer, because I think we've shared a few interns. And every time I interview an intern, we'll interview a few every session. The ones that write me a note, a handwritten thank you note in particular, are the ones that are still in consideration at the end of the day. It means so much.
Yeah, it really does. And I'll share this in case any current employees of our teams, you know, listen in and tune into the podcast, which I hope they do, or future employees of the team. You know, those things make a difference. They really do. And employees that take the time to say thank you at the end of a season for an internship, or if you're lucky enough to receive a bonus for your work, either with us or at another company over the summer, take that time and write, even if it's three sentences, to just say, thank you so much for doing that. Thank you so much for recognizing my hard work. It really goes a long way. I can't emphasize it enough. And the beauty is, and I think you appreciate it, we're about the same age, less and less people are doing it. And my style in business is to try and differentiate from others. And it's just, I think it goes a really long way.
Hey, we were certainly on the same page on that. So can I ask you one extra question here? And that is, when did you know, or what made you realize that it was time to rename the two teams that you've taken on?
Well, there were different dynamics. The first was a function of the dynamic in Akron. With any business, and probably true for a lot of, you know, business owners and leaders out in the community, you certainly can't talk about being prepared. You can't come charging into a room and pretending to understand a dynamic that you don't know. In Akron, I moved to the area at the end of 2012. The team in town, the Arrows, was my first year owning the team in 2013. you know, we spent a lot of time as an executive team. Jim Fander, who I know you know, our incredible GM and Akron guy, who really understands the dynamic of the, you know, the minor league baseball business and understands Akron, having grown up there. You know, we really sat back and took a good portion of that year and really focused on, you know, what the minor league baseball team meant up to that point in the community. We knew the stadium had had some issues, although it was a beautiful place. It was older, it was tired, it needed a little bit of love and attention. But we also knew that there were certain elements to the Arrows experience that were dated. And when I went around town, and as you know, I like to speak to different groups and ask questions, I said, sort of, what is your impression of the minor league baseball team in town? And most people had said, oh, we used to go there for our kids' birthday parties or for corporate events, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, but we haven't been back. The experience isn't as good as it used to be, or the food isn't as good as it used to be, or they used to have great promotions and fireworks. They don't do those to the same extent anymore. To me, that created an opportunity, but also a challenge in that, we had to reinvent and reinvigorate the experience. And that's what we've worked so hard in Akron to do. It seemed impossible to me to rebuild that experience and then get the attention of the community without really rebranding it and starting over. I suppose you could make the case that we could have stayed the Arrows forever and changed those things and had the same results, but time would prove that differently. We did change the name at the end of the 2013 season, and have been fortunate to see just about a 27% attendance increase as a result of that change. Jacksonville, you know, quickly, very different, large city, NFL market, no Major League Baseball, within about a 5-hour drive, so very different than Akron, which we know, of course, the Indians right up 77. And the Jacksonville team, previously known as the Suns, had been one of the longest tenured sports teams in minor league baseball. So it was a very touchy thing to even consider changing the name of that team. But we spent some time in the community, talked to leaders, really watched the trends of what had happened in that community, and decided equally that it was time to make a change. So can't say that it's always the right answer in every community to change the name of the team. Although in the two markets that we've operated thus far, it's been the play.
I think the one thing that people could take away from something that you've done here is the change is scary, particularly to business owners looking at the bottom line. And you can point to the things that you've done to change that have made an impact, that have made a better profit at the end of the day, more people coming to the stadium, more people trying the big ice cream that you have. I know at Canal Park.
The screamer.
The change can be good as long as you come at it with good preparation. Well, let me just do a little recap here on our three tips. Number one, hiring the right people, hiring great people. Number two, tying a thread to your community. Number three, being prepared in everything that you do. Bonus tip here is that beauty of the thank you note. So, Ken, let me give you a chance here to talk about what's coming up. Anything you want to promote for the Rubber Ducks or the Jumbo Shrimp seasons?
Well, I would just say that, you know, we're really lucky to be doing what we do. We're sitting here as we sit down, you know, probably a little bit before this airs, but we're just weeks between, you know, the shifting of a season here as winter departs, hopefully sooner than later, and spring comes. We're just, you know, just a few weeks from the start of the Rubber Duck season. Friday, April 13th. I've had a lot of jokes about Friday the 13th. I hope that's not in any way a statement of the weather to be expected on opening day. We've been lucky a number of these years of having great weather on opening day. By the way, last year was not one of them. We ended up having to postpone our game the day after opening day with 4 inches of snow on the field. So those are things that we hope don't happen this year. And I think that we're excited for the season to start, but an incredible summer of promotions, fireworks, fun, great food. Obviously continuing to see, for those of you that are just core baseball fans, great players coming through the dynamic and through the Indian system. You know, 15 of the players that played on that World Series team of just a couple of years ago came through Akron recently. So, you know, a great opportunity to continue to see the future of the tribe right here at Canal Park in Akron.
All right. Well, if you're a listener in one of those two markets, make sure you get out to the ballparks, check out a game. I know I'm going to be coming to the Frozen Tongue Bobblehead Night. Shout out to Christmas Story. That's a pretty creative one.
Yeah, you know, our themes continue to get wackier and wackier, and we continue to play a few of these themes out, and you know, we've had a lot of fun with bobbleheads. Some of the favorites the last couple of years. You know, we had Marla Hooch from League of Their Own come out to the ballpark last year, and the actress that played her was fabulous and signed autographs. Obviously, had the Marla Hooch bobblehead. You know, there's every year we just have a couple of these different kind of fun and wacky things that bring the fans out, and just, you know, that's what minor league baseball has become known for.
Good stuff. All right, Ken. Well, you ready for a couple of jokes?
Let's go. Take it away.
All right. So yeah, this is 3 for 3. We've got some three tips, or four in this case, and then I'm going to serve up Ken three jokes here. I'm going to see if I can get him to laugh at one of them. I don't think I have a very good chance at this one. These are all pretty bad jokes, but I did find a couple of baseball jokes for you today, so maybe that sweetens the pot a little bit. But first off, come up with a little bit of a wager. If I can get you to laugh, maybe you do a tweet or some sort of a post about the show when it comes out. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, I'll do that anyway. And how about a few tickets here to a listener of your choice? You can find a way to give away one of the great podcast listeners can get 4 tickets to a Rubber Ducks game this year. But you got to get me to laugh. That's the name of the game. And more than happy to tweet out about the show. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, awesome. All right. So, and if you keep a straight face, then a lot of our listeners drink Starbucks, kind of a ubiquitous a gift card I could send out to you. Is that something that would appeal to you, Ken?
Sounds great. I like my chances.
Sounds good. All right. Well, without further ado, we'll jump into it here. Let me ask, did I tell you about the idea I had about selling almonds at Canal Park?
No.
Yeah, never mind. It's just nuts.
You got a little laugh. You got a little mini chuckle.
Mini chuckle. We'll see if we can increase that a little bit. And I tell you, it was not a good joke. And we talked about some of the big foods that you've had there. I don't know if you've had any noodle dishes, but what do you call a fake noodle?
I don't know.
An impasta.
That is good. I like that. That's good. Right. You got me on that one.
All right.
You got me on that one. You better go for the third one now. I have a feeling this could be the clincher.
This is a thinking man's joke. I'll serve it up to you. See what we got here. And well, let me ask: did you hear the joke about the home run ball?
No.
No. You know what, Ken? You probably wouldn't get it. It's over your head.
That's great. Right. Even my nine-year-old would laugh at these. Those are good.
That's the beauty of this. Take that home and tell those to him.
Yeah, well, let's get 4 tickets over to you and get it out to one of the podcast listeners. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I really appreciate it today, Ken. Thanks for being on the show and sharing some of your great knowledge with our listeners.
My pleasure, and we'll see everybody out at the ballpark real soon.
This is Kurt Clyden, and I thank you for tuning in to another episode of 3 for 3. If you're not listening to the podcast through an app on your mobile phone, head over to the podcast app on your iPhone or to the Google Play app for Androids. Click on the search tool in the app. Type in 343. That's the number 3, F-O-R, and then the number 3 again. And then subscribe so you can get every episode automatically. We have some great episodes coming up, so I hope you join us for more. See you next time.
3 for 3 is produced by the marketing gurus at Clyden & Associates in Akron, Ohio. Clyden & Associates is a full-service marketing communications agency that has been in business since 1975. For more information about the company, please visit Clyden.com, that's Kleidon.com, or call 330-666-5984. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or sponsoring a show, please email Kurt, that's Kurt with a K, @Clyden.com. Until next episode, keep building a great business and always, always keep laughing.